This is the Voice of America, Studio One.
My problem with alcohol stemmed after I took the first drink. I could never predict the outcome. Near the end of my drinking, just a few drinks started creating serious life problems for me. In other words, I'd find myself with car damage, which I didn't know where it came from or who did it or whether I'd done it. Sometimes driving home in a complete blackout, looking for my car in the morning. Alcohol is my enemy, not because I'm weak-willed or lacking in character or morally unfit, but just because for some reason my body cannot process alcohol in the way that it's processed by the great majority of people who use it.
I couldn't think, I couldn't read, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't concentrate, I thought I was losing my mind, and I quit my job. And I was home alone on a Sunday morning, and I must have drank the night before and used pills. And I got up that morning and I really felt suicidal. I mean, I felt like I could not cope. And I went down to the emergency room at the hospital, tried to get admitted to the psychiatric unit. The psychiatrist I saw felt that I didn't need to be hospitalized and was willing to give me a new prescription. So I got another prescription for sleeping pills, went home, bought a bottle of wine, and I remember doing this, and sat in my apartment drinking. And that night I remember taking a lot of pills. So I was combining the alcohol and the pills.
I was so trapped in the prison of alcoholism that I was unable to maintain or cultivate or develop any kind of a relationship. The alcoholic has a tendency for so long to blame everybody and everything for his drinking. In other words, my boss, he doesn't recognize me. My wife, she doesn't treat me right. The world is wrong and I'm right, sort of. And what we're really doing and don't know, we're drinking at our wife, at the world, at everybody else, blaming everybody and everything for our problems, without knowing for so long that our problem, first and primarily, is alcohol. And once we stop that, we can come to grips with these things. I think alcohol is terrific. It's a fine social instrument for the majority of people, it appears. But for those 9 or 10 million of us alcoholics in America, according to the latest statistics, it's a deadly game we're playing.
Got you the soda, mud in your eye. Baby, do I feel high, oh me, oh my. Do I feel high? Dry martini, jigger of gin. Oh, what a spell you've got me in, oh my. Do I feel high?
From Studio One, the Voice of America presents Oh, What a Spell You've Got Me In. A look at the tragedy and challenge of alcoholism. Your narrator is Jack Weitzel.
Dry martini, jigger of gin. Oh, what a spell you've got me in, oh my. Do I feel high?
More than 10 million Americans and countless millions throughout the world know firsthand about the spell of alcohol. For them, drinking is a deadly game, and one that leads to misery, illness, and an early death. But for the rest of the world, that's hard to imagine, because alcoholic beverages are enjoyed almost everywhere. According to the World Health Organization, the production and consumption of alcohol is rapidly rising in both industrial and developing nations. Drinking has long been one of the most popular and pleasing of all pastimes, dating back at least to biblical times. The book of Genesis tells of Noah becoming drunk on the wine of his own vineyards. The ancient Egyptians brewed a potent form of beer and left warnings in Sanskrit of drinking excessive amounts. Then and now, alcohol has been associated with fun, laughter, relaxation, and just plain feeling good.
I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and
sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
We manage to find infinite reasons to drink. Celebrations, romance, loneliness. To forget, to calm down, to ease those inner tensions and frustrations. Drinking is the all-purpose pleasure button. And when we're not pushing that button ourselves, we can still have fun laughing at those who are.
You've had one too many. Ooh, man, you know you had too many when you're filling in a form and under length of residence, you write in 43 feet, not counting the garage. Or you get home at 3 in the morning and your wife says, so you came home. Why? And you explain it's the only place open.
The American love affair with drinking is even reflected in the language, where more than 300 words or phrases describe the state of being intoxicated, inebriated, drunk, tipsy, crocked, stinko, soused, plastered, or three sheets to the wind. Books, movies, television, advertising. Society promotes drinking everywhere, and songs romanticize the drinker who gets soused or plastered over a lost job or a lost love.
So set 'em up, Joe. I got a little story I think you should know. We're drinking, my friend, to the end of a brief episode. Make it one for my babe and one more for the road.
This country takes great pride in being able to drink. If you know anything about the old movies depicting the pioneer days and the image of man being able to cross the frontiers, it was certainly with a gun in one hand and a shot of whiskey in the other. And so we have sort of idealized the image of a hard-drinking man, and I think to our detriment.
That's Dr. Mohan Advani, director of the Alcoholism Treatment Center at the Psychiatric Institute in Washington, D.C.
We live in a society where it is abnormal not to drink. They say you can drink the substance, but don't get drunk. Now, there's a problem with this, because the only reason people drink is because they want to get drunk, so that the message is not very clear.
Make it one for my babe and one more for the road.
While 150 million Americans drink alcohol without suffering serious problems, some 10 million adults and 3.5 million youths are not so lucky. They are under the spell of alcohol. They are problem drinkers, alcohol abusers, and alcoholics, and they are running high risks with their health. John DeLuca is the former director of the United States government's National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
Alcohol, as it goes through the body, is a very, very strong drug, and it essentially affects all the organ systems. And so it is a risk factor in cancer. It's a risk factor in stress, a risk factor in any number of heart diseases.
Dr. Advani elaborates.
You take any system and start seeing the list of things that it can do, it's enormous, ranging from bleeding from the stomach to malabsorption of everything that we eat to commonly known cirrhosis of the liver and very acute pancreatitis. Or the worst thing that can happen to the brain is becomes demented, because the brain has really lost cells. In short, there's not a system in your physical body that is not affected.
So the alcoholic endangers both his body and his mind. But the damage doesn't even stop there. John DeLuca.
In recent years, we have conclusively determined that there is an association between excessive consumption of alcohol during pregnancy and birth defects. And in fact, what we call fetal alcohol syndrome, or alcohol-related birth defects, are the third leading cause of mental retardation in the United States. And yet it's the only cause of mental retardation that's totally preventable.
Alcoholics disrupt and lose families, friends, and jobs. They are also involved in a high percentage of violence in this country. Fires, industrial accidents, car fatalities, homicides, rapes, child abuse. The cost to society is devastating.
When you take into consideration the number of people who are at one time or another during their lifetime affected by an alcohol-related problem, it is possible that nearly 40 million Americans are having their lives affected by this disease. And that in itself, in just numbers, defines this as this country's number one public health problem.
But of course, the problem of alcoholism begins and ends with the individual.
I ended up in a mental institution where the courts had sent me, the state of Virginia, because I had become literally a menace to myself and to society because of an inability to drink safely. I was arrested time and time again. In one period, I was in jail 14 times in 18 months. Everything from assault and battery, breaking and entering, fighting with the police, a hit-and-run automobile accident, all of these things which the horror of them overwhelmed me.
Medical science, too, has been overwhelmed in its efforts to pinpoint a single cause or even a definition of alcoholism. New research reveals that about 25% of all alcoholics probably inherit the potential for the disease at birth, genetically. Psychiatrists talk about an alcoholic personality, dependent, egocentric, and unable to handle stress. Again, Dr. Advani.
If you talk to the anthropologist, he'll give you his cultural theory. If you talk to the sociologist, he'll tell you that the inner city has something to do with it. Or if you talk to the biochemist, he'll talk about the enzymes that are different from others. And if you talk to the psychiatrist, he'll tell you that they're all depressed and anxious and therefore they have to drink. So it depends upon who you talk to and in what country and in what setting.
This complex picture of alcoholism is significantly changing the way we look at the problem. John DeLuca.
In my opinion, alcoholism is a disease. I think we might be speaking, as we learn more about it, of a number of diseases. An analogy I think that's understandable is the analogy to cancer, that there are a series of different kinds of cancers. We suspect that there will be, at one point in time, consensus that there are a series of different kinds of alcoholism.
No single approach, then, can deal adequately with so complex an illness. But the Smithers Alcoholism Treatment Center in New York, like Dr. Advani's unit in Washington, represents the current standard for treatment across the country. It attacks the problem in various stages and from different angles, providing individual and group therapy, family counseling, education, even prescribing antabuse, a chemical that makes a patient sick if he or she drinks alcohol. Two elements are critical to all these treatment programs: a high degree of structure for the alcoholic and the absolute requirement of abstinence. The individual must stop all drinking of alcohol. But before any treatment can be effective, the first step is detoxification for those physically addicted. Smithers coordinator Dr. Ann Geller explains, with help from a recovering alcoholic.
If you stop suddenly and you're physically dependent on alcohol, you will get a withdrawal syndrome, which is extremely unpleasant at best. and which is life-threatening at worst.
I was nauseous a lot of the times and vomiting. At night I would wake up in sweats. At work I would be sitting in my office and all of a sudden I would become very shaky, and I might have had a lot to drink, and the pills combined maybe a day or two before, and at that point was already beginning to withdraw from it physically. But the worst thing for me was, what I experienced as being terrifying, I wouldn't even say uncomfortable, was the loss of memory, the inability to concentrate, to hold a thought, to be able to have a conversation with somebody without my thoughts racing. And I think some of that was just physical.
If you have a severe kind of withdrawal, you can hallucinate, you can have seizures, and you may, if you're extremely unfortunate, go into delirium tremens. And people in the past, and even now, die in delirium tremens. What is causing harm to the body is, in fact, the fact that you have stopped abruptly taking a drug to which it's become adapted. Now, you could taper off using alcohol, but this, in practice, isn't a very good idea because alcohol is a very short-acting drug. So what, in fact, you do is you substitute a drug in the same pharmacological category as alcohol, but which is longer-acting. And the drug that we choose is Librium. And the reason we choose Librium is that it has a rather low abuse potential, although people do abuse Librium. And it's a long-acting drug, and it's very safe.
Another strategy in battling alcoholism has been to reduce the availability of wine, beer, and distilled beverages by restricting their sale, increasing sales taxes, or raising the drinking age. But new developments in medical research sound more promising. Through blood tests, we may soon be able to determine who can and cannot metabolize alcohol properly, identifying potential problem drinkers at an early age. Other tests indicate that in certain people, the urge to drink may be caused by a chemical imbalance in the brain, a problem that can be medically treated. And attempts are being made to teach controlled drinking to alcoholics. But for now, the victims of alcoholism remain under the powerful stranglehold of a long-term physical and psychological addiction. Faced with a society that encourages drinking and a medical community just beginning to understand or even recognize their problem, many alcoholics, not surprisingly, seek help from a new direction.
We believe in Alcoholics Anonymous that alcoholism is a threefold disease. It's a disease of the body and of the mind and of the spirit.
Bob P. is an alcoholic and the worldwide chairman of Alcoholics Anonymous. He doesn't use his last name because he wishes to remain anonymous in keeping with the spirit of the organization he joined more than 20 years ago. Alcoholics Anonymous, or AA, as it's called, is the world's most popular and successful organization combating alcoholism. It has well over 1 million members and 40,000 groups in 100 countries. In the United States, the style and principles of AA have been adopted and applied in almost every alcoholism treatment facility, both public and private. Since 1935, this unique organization has defied all the professional and traditional approaches to the problem. On any day of the week, at almost any hour, fellow alcoholics gather in AA meetings to share their common experiences, their love, support, and hope. The working motto of AA members is to stay sober one day at a time. And this approach succeeds where others fail.
The reason that AA is successful is because it not only changes the way that a person thinks and therefore takes care of the mental part of the disease, but it also addresses man's basic spiritual nature.
John G. is a 40-year-old television producer, an alcoholic, and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Once we begin to stop drinking, we begin to accept maybe a simple fact that applies to all men, that indeed we are simple specks in the universe. It's a sense, if you will, of trying, maybe for the first time, to practice just a little bit of humility by saying, I cannot do it alone. And of course, before us, we say, I need the people in AA and they need me. And then overriding that, of course, this concept of a power greater than myself. Many of us choose to call him God, as I do. It's not required. AA is not a religious program by any means.
AA is also unique because it has no ties or connections to anything outside of itself. It refuses outside money, has no alliance with any organization, takes no stand on issues, supports no cause, does no research, and offers no treatment or education. We don't care about alcoholism, members will say. We care about alcoholics. In this way, AA remains uncompromised and purely a fellowship of alcoholics who know the problem from the inside out.
Certainly, speaking for myself, and I think for most alcoholics, they are really bankrupt spiritually. They have no sense of self-worth. Their relationships with other people are pretty much destroyed. They are cynical, they're hopeless, they're helpless. And when they come to AA, they find, of course, first of all, that they are not alone in this, that there are many people there who have gone through the same thing that they are going through and who have come out the other side as strong, happy, worthwhile people.
When I went to my very first AA meeting, I had a sense that maybe for the first time, these people understood me. Now, I had never met them before. I had people, my ex-wife, the one, plead with me not to drink, and I meant not to, but I somehow couldn't come to grips with it. I felt isolated and alone until I got to AA, and these people knew where I had been. They knew the loneliness, the remorse, the regret, the self-hate, the lack of esteem.
And, you know, what AA talks about is just the self-centeredness. I mean, we just interpret everything in our lives as, you know, happening to us, you know, and this is happening to me. And also, real avoidance of any pain. And what people in AA get told over and over again is you can walk through it, or you'll hurt as long as you're supposed to hurt.
Robin G. joined AA 2 years ago. She was 29 and addicted to alcohol and sedatives.
This might be the grandiosity of alcoholics, too, is, you know, somehow or other, we're not supposed to feel pain like that. AA gives everybody permission to be human and to hurt and to feel bad and to feel sad. And it's also telling them you can be better and you can grow and you can have courage and you can overcome this. And that's how it was for me.
I remember the first particular person I heard speak who lived a life similar to my own. He did some of the same things while drinking. I related. And then I said, gee, I'm not the only one who did that. It was a sense of relief.
It's defined in many ways, but it's the power of that amount of people coming together and sharing themselves that I think pulls the person out of themselves.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Buck Doyle, and I'm an alcoholic.
It's at these AA meetings that the alcoholic begins to come out of him or herself by listening to others and sharing both the struggles and the rewards of sobriety. Perhaps this is the key to the power of AA, what some call its spiritual nature, the eventual realization by members that their suffering is shared, and that if suffering can be shared, so indeed can joy, the joy of ending that suffering. At a typical AA meeting, a longtime member, Buck, shares his experience being arrested for drunkenness and having his wife come to the police station to pick him up.
Dolly had come when she was 9 months pregnant on a rainy, icy night at about 4 o'clock in the morning. I was screaming to call my boss, this shows insanity because that's all he needed, and let him know who I was and call Congressman so-and-so and Senator so-and-so, and the prisoners were screaming, shut that bum up. And so Dolly came down there to save the job. I said, I don't intend to leave here. I want to go to court. I want the papers to have this story of the terrible police abuse. The sergeant there in the station house looked at me like I was a bug. I can remember that part. And he said, mister, you know, you don't have any respect for your fellow prisoners. They want you out of here. You have no respect for us officers. Please, why don't you just have enough decency not to have your child born here? And Dolly said, promised me she had a fifth at home. So I agreed to go home. And when the next day, I was so full of humiliation. I said, look, I am not going to drink. Never going to drink again. I've often said that if booze did this to me, humiliated me, created these problems in my life, that I was not going to drink, and last night convinced me. And then, you know, we don't just quit. I said, furthermore, there's no booze coming into this house. I was the only one bringing it in. That's how we quit, and I meant it. And you know what happens in a few days, a few weeks, you get your health back and you feel too good to be sober and you haven't had a drink for 2 weeks. You're entitled to an award, you reward yourself, and wonder why it all happened. I didn't know until I got here that all I needed was that first drink to change my whole attitude, my whole thrust, my whole resolution, and everything else would change. So it is the first drink.
Buck's story serves as an inspiration for other alcoholics because, as an AA member, he has successfully stayed sober now for 27 years. The world is far from solving the challenge of alcoholism in all its varieties. The governments of many nations still refuse even to recognize their own problems with it. New efforts now being made at all levels in the United States do hold the promise of major breakthroughs. But for now, and perhaps always, the battle of each alcoholic is waged one day at a time, as they say in Alcoholics Anonymous. AA's approach seems to penetrate to the source of some basic truths, not only about drinking, but about living. And it's reflected in another favorite AA motto, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Scotch and soda, mud in your eye, baby, do I feel high, oh me, oh my. Do I feel high? Dry martini, jigger of gin. Oh, what a spell you've got me in, oh my. Do I feel higher than a kite can fly? Give me loving, baby, I feel high.
From Studio One, the Voice of America has brought you Oh, What a Spell You've Got Me In, a look at the tragedy and challenge of alcoholism. Jack Weitzel narrated. The program was written and directed by Gil Klein. Studio engineer, Keith Mayo. Executive director, Jim Parisi. This is Kay Gallant inviting you to join us next week at the same time for another production from The Voice of America, Studio One.